You're listening to The Real Short Box, a comic book podcast made for geeks by geeks.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in and listening to The Real Short Box. My name is Donald, and I have a very special guest here with us today, one Los Angeles-based writer-producer, Robert Klinger. Thank you for joining us, Robert.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Robert and I have been friends for quite a while now. We met in a writer's group a long time ago out here in L.A., and have stayed in contact ever since.
There you go.
Yeah. Yep, can't get more simple of an origin story than that, I guess.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, particularly when we're talking about comic books. I wish it was more exciting, you know, maybe one of us was doused with chemicals and had powers, but that's not right. The case.
No fist fight behind a dumpster or nothing.
No. Although, now that you mention it, I feel like that needs to be part of the story, so.
Okay, maybe, well, I mean, you know, we got the weekend coming up, so, yeah.
Right, I'm free time. At some point. Yeah, we can make some time.
Sounds good.
Yeah, but can we like do something like we slap each other with Subway sandwiches or something behind the dumpster?
Sure.
I think that sounds a little more weird, and that's what people go for nowadays, you know.
Oddly, I've actually had a baguette sword fight near a dumpster.
You know, knowing you, that doesn't surprise me. So we're here today actually to discuss. We're gonna do a little spotlight on one Scarlett Johansson, aka the Black Widow. And we're going to start out talking a little bit about Scarlett Johansson's kind of her past. And, when a mom and a dad really love each other and they get together and they become intimate, they can form a baby. And that baby was Scarlett Johansson.
Oh, I thought you were going to do an Oscar speech.
No. Okay. No. I'm way too far away from ever winning an Oscar. You've probably seen my web series, so yeah, it's not anywhere near that.
All right.
Yeah. Early life. So basically, is there anything you want to mention about Scarlett in particular when we're talking about her early in her career or early in her life in general?
No, just I love her work. I mean, she's first of all, obviously, she's very attractive to look at.
Yeah. Yeah. But she's a pretty woman.
There's a lot of attractive to look at, but kind of it ends there. But she's also so damn likable in almost everything she does.
Yeah, she has this very like a sweetness to her that just comes across very honest and innocent, you know?
Yeah, it's sweet and it's fun and it's immensely and eminently likable.
Mm-hmm. She was born in the 80s. She was a child of the mid-80s. So she got to see some of the 80s and definitely 90s. She was born in New York, in Manhattan. Her father was Carsten Olof Johansson. He was an architect, originally from Copenhagen, and that's in Denmark. Her grandfather, Eisner Johansson, was an art historian, screenwriter, and film director whose own father was Swedish. So an interesting mix on that side, let alone her mother's side. Her mother named Melanie Sloan. Was a New Yorker who had worked as a producer, and she's from Jewish descent, and her family lived in Poland and in Russia. So, you know, she has a lot of different things going on there. So she's got this Jewish descent, some Polish, Swedish, Denmark, Copenhagenish, you know, all this stuff kind of mixed in there to make somebody that's just very kind-hearted and very, very nice. She seems like the girl next door type of person, which is super cool for someone. It always is good when you don't come across as arrogant, and I don't think she ever has.
I haven't seen it.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, and also it's interesting that she's able to maintain that, because a lot of people have a sense of, oh, New Yorkers, you know, the big, bad, gritty city, whatever, blah, 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 blah. And I lived there for 10 years, and I've always met the nicest people living in New York, and it's like she just kind of personifies that without being, it's not like she's not overly cosmopolitan, she's not snooty, she's just, you know, like you said, that girl next door, you know?
Right. I actually had a very odd experience. My first time in New York was in 2003. It was me and my best friend at the time. We went there to visit to see if we were going to move there. And we were in Manhattan in 2003. And anybody that knows their history, Manhattan in 2003, they had that great blackout that occurred. And that was when I was in the city. And I was on a city bus. And it was...
better than a subway.
Right. Suddenly the city of kindness, or what I thought was the city of kindness, became the city of every man for himself run. It's another terrorist attack.
Wow.
Scenario. So,
oh, that's right. Because that was fresh off of, it was only a couple of years after the towers. Yeah.
Only a couple of years and no one had any information because all the power was out. And, you know, it was around the time it was cell phones were pretty prevalent at that moment, you know, very popular. So like towers were down, you couldn't get reception a lot of places, and it just got kind of bad for us. Like we were sleeping in the airport, running out of money. And, it was a scenario where I was like, you know what? I'm not coming back. And so then we decided to move to LA instead.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. That was the deciding factor. But, in 2015, I believe it was, a friend of mine that you also know, Christopher Turner, who was also in that writer's group of ours.
Okay,
he lived in New York, so I went to visit him and decided to give the city another shot. And I'm so glad I did, because I did find it much more warmer and more inviting and very much not what I remember it when the shit hit the fan in 2003. So
yeah, people are nicer when they don't think that they're under attack.
Yeah, that's usually the case, I find.
Well, I too am glad you went back too, so that you don't have that taste in your mouth forever.
I know, right? Yeah. So, Scarlett Johansson's early career, she like worked in a film called North in '94. She played John Ritter's daughter in that film. When she was a younger person, like a younger girl. When she was a younger girl, she would practice standing, acting, and staring in a mirror until she made herself cry. She wanted to be the next Judy Garland, so to speak.
That's wild.
That's what she always told people.
A lot of people just do that later in life.
Yeah. Normally, people move out to L.A., and then their dreams are shattered, and then they spend time looking in the mirror so they can just cry.
Yeah.
It's usually the way that works, but she just did it the other way around, and good for her.
There you go. Yeah, absolutely. She got it in the right order, it looks like.
Yeah, so she's been in a lot of films. Like, she appeared in a minor role in Fall and Home Alone 3, of all things. She was also, she got very good attention for her film, a 1998 film, The Horse Whisperer, which was a Robert Redford directed film. Went over very well, and she got a lot of accolades for that. People really appreciated her. Even Redford himself, he described her as 13 going on 30, as far as like her maturity level and stuff. So that brought her into some more films. Interestingly,
wait. You skipped over Manny and Lowe.
Oh, well, God.
Which is quite a wacky little movie. Actually, an old lawyer of mine, Dean Silvers, produced that movie.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know if you remember the title, Spanking the Monkey. It was a peculiar little film. It's an old film. Yeah. But anyway, that was his first film. And Manny and Lowe was one of the later ones. So it's quirky. But she is terrific. And she's like a little kid. You know, she's like a...
Yeah, that came out like 96, I think.
That was 96.
She'd have been 12 years old, I think. 11 or 12.
There you go. Yeah. But she was terrific. She was quite a bit of fun.
Nice. Yeah. Yes, you did do Manny and Lowe. I'm sorry I skipped over that one. But there's quite a bit to cover here for her.
Indeed.
A lot in her small time on this earth. Yep. She was in My Brother the Pig in 1999. 2001, she was in The Man Who Wasn't There, which was a Coen Brothers film. So she's like upping her game. Like,
yeah, very much so.
Yeah. She was in Ghost World. In 2001, I think that was kind of a breakthrough role for her. That was an adaptation of Daniel Clowes' graphic novel of the same name, Ghost World. So that was based off of a comic book. Her first, I think that I'm aware of, her first time acting in a comic book film, which is funny because now that's what she's primarily known for.
Yeah, totally. I think that was it. Yeah.
Yeah. She worked with Chris Evans for a film what was the name of it? It was the, I think, The Perfect Score. That came out in 2004. And that was about kids trying to get into college and thought that they could basically steal the SAT questions in order to increase their odds.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Last time I remember watching that was 2 years ago at a hotel in Cleveland, Ohio, right where I was getting my hot tub ready because it was relaxation time. And I was just in the city for that morning.
Okay.
And I had my breakfast and then I turned on the TV and it was this film, The Perfect Score. And I was like, yeah, why not? It still carries over. It's not a bad little film.
There you go. And right around there was also Lost in Translation.
Yeah. Lost in Translation as well.
Somehow I couldn't get past Bill Murray.
You know, Bill Murray is great in that film. It's subtle Bill Murray. It's not like wackadoo, like crazy Bill Murray.
Okay, well, I have to give it another shot then. Because I'm thinking, you know, Stripes, Ghostbusters, Tootsie. And it just seemed like, all right, well, I'll give it another shot.
Yeah, I think you should, because it's actually a pretty quiet, nice little film for him. Not one that you would expect him to do.
All right.
But she did a lot. She was David Arquette. She was with him in Eight-Legged Freaks, if you remember that one, in 2002.
Absolutely.
Spiders exposed to toxic waste that grow to freakishly large sizes and begin killing and harvesting people.
Fun little movie. If they would have made it for cheap, they would have made their money back.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, 100% correct. And that we would have seen way more sequels, you know?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. She did the Lost in Translation. Then she was in a drama, The Girl with a Pearl Earring, not to be confused with The Girl with a Pearl Necklace, which is not the film you want to Google when you're trying to find this film.
No, it's certainly not at work.
No, it's definitely not safe for work, let me tell you. She started doing Woody Allen films at that point too.
Yeah.
And that was an interesting time in her career also. Woody Allen,
and his too.
Yeah. He's had a very, very interesting career over the years, and one I'm not going to get into right now, but,
it's a whole other podcast.
That also could relate maybe to the girl with the pearl necklace as well.
I'll leave that alone.
Yeah. Maybe it's best we just let that sleeping dog lie.
Yeah.
She was in the drama A Love Song for Bobby Long, which was co-starring John Travolta. John Travolta came to Arclight, where I worked at the time, to premiere this film.
Oh, wow.
And let me tell you, there's not another nicer guy. Like, when you meet him, than John Travolta, like, is all this, like, all the people that were surrounding him wanted him to leave, you know, let's go, you know, John, we have another appointment, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, no, he's like, we still have some fans here that want to talk and get autographs and stuff and pictures.
Oh, that's great.
So to his credit, he stayed there for everybody until everybody was seen and heard. And, you know, he got pictures with them and signed things and stuff. And then he left, you know, very humble, very nice guy.
Nice. Very nice.
She started doing some other things. She was in the live-action comedy, the SpongeBob SquarePants movie. She voiced Princess Mindy, the daughter of King Neptune.
Okay.
And she agreed to it because of her love of cartoons and the Ren and Stimpy show.
Ah, that's brilliant.
Yeah. I think so, too. With the Woody Allen stuff, she was in Match Point, if I recall.
Absolutely,
was one of them.
She was.
And she was also in... Geez, she went from there to a Michael Bay film, if I'm correct, and that was The Island.
The Island, yes.
Yeah,
that was
Critical Darling.
It was a fun little movie.
It is. But, it is fun. It got mixed reviews, but you know, it made $163 million, somewhere around there. So it only made like a $40 million in profit out of a $163 million budget. So I guess it didn't prompt any more islands to be made.
Yeah, exactly. But and also, it just kind of reminded me of Total Recall, the that a divorce movie.
Yeah. I could totally see that. Yeah. She bounced back over then to another Woody Allen film, this time with Hugh Jackman, called Scoop, and one of my favorites, actually, of hers. I think she's great in it. She plays a journalism student. And
Yes. And she's like falls for the guy she's...
Mm-hmm.
Well, don't tell me, because I do want to see it.
Okay. All right. I won't tell you. But
originally, I thought it was Snoop, and I was like, why is she in a movie about Snoop Dogg?
Yeah. No, not Snoop Dogg.
Okay.
No. There's no, and there's not even any doggy style in here, so you don't have to worry about that.
Okay, good.
No Snoop Dogg. She was in The Black Dahlia, which is a Brian De Palma film.
Brian De Palma, yeah.
Yeah, and then she started doing.
Was a New Image release, so I hope she got paid up front.
Yeah. You know, sometimes you just do stuff for the love of film.
That's true.
Yeah.
That is very true.
Yeah. She was in The Prestige, which is a Christopher Nolan film. That was in 2006, and okay. She was in that.
What's crazy, can I just point out, I mean,
yeah,
she started as a kid and was able to hold her own with these big names from an early age. We're only at 2006, and we've gone through so many titles with so many, I mean, Woody Allen, come on.
Yeah, Woody Allen, you know? Brian De Palma, you know, yeah. Like, these are some big names that not everybody just gets to work with. And sometimes people dream their whole lives to work with. And she's just casually just, you know, hopping from project to project with these people.
Yeah. In 2000, what was she, 20, 21? I mean, come on.
She would have been like 17, 18, I think, somewhere around there.
Yeah, so good for her.
Yeah. Then she was in another film with Chris Evans in 2007, The Nanny Diaries. That was also with Laura Linney.
Yes.
Yeah, and in 2008, she was with Natalie Portman and Eric Bana in The Other Boiling Girl.
Yep.
And then she started to do even more, but I think it's when we get to...
That's when we get to Vicky Cristina Barcelona, one of my favorite films of all time.
Another Woody Allen, romantic Woody comedy Allen. Drama.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was her third, I think, Woody Allen film.
I think that's right.
Yeah, and that one... she played one of the love interests of Javier Bardem.
And
played along Penelope Cruz.
That's right. Because when I think sexy man, I think Javier Bardem.
Yeah.
But not from that movie. From the one with the with that the No Country.
Right. Yeah. No Country for Old Men.
That was a hot look.
He was also in that other one. I can't remember the name. In Love in the Time of Cholera, I think. Wasn't he also in that?
Anything with cholera in it, I skip.
Yeah. Most people would. Yeah. And I think
most people did.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, it was a Colombian film. It was like filmed partially in Colombia.
Okay.
And I remember watching it at a Colombian restaurant. They were having movie nights, like, to show like Colombian films.
Okay.
And that was their premiere, their first one. Coincidentally, that was the only one they had. Then they never had any more. I don't know if mixing cholera with your restaurant was
the best thing. Yeah,
maybe the best choice. I don't know, but they just didn't go over very well. So
they could have stuck with Betty La Fea.
Yeah, they could have stuck with pretty much anything. But no, they just.
Oh well.
So after dipping her toes into Ghost World, you know, which is a graphic novel comic book world, mm-hmm. She dips her toes again at playing a femme fatale. Silk and Floss in the
Spirit
film. The Spirit. The one written by originally by Will Eisner and this time mm-hmm. directed by none other than Frank Miller, who cut his chop on the film that he wrote, which was Sin City.
Right.
So he basically used the same style that was in Sin City and Robert Rodriguez's style and did The Spirit, which was universally panned. I mean, nobody liked this film. But it's also, if I recall, it might be her first time working with Sam Jackson, too, was in this film, The Spirit.
Okay. And can I just point out Will Eisner, who originally wrote this thing back in the day? I mean, that's the guy who basically invented the term graphic novel.
Yeah. Yeah. He did a lot of noir kind of murder mystery type stories with The Spirit. Unfortunately.
this is the one that killed it.
Yeah. And the sidekick that he created was not one that we really are ever going to see again, which is why a lot of these original Spirit series have never been really reprinted reprinted so we could enjoy them now. And it's just because of caricatures of African descent that we do not see as something that's cool now.
Oh, gotcha, gotcha. All right.
Back then, it might have been fine, but now not so much.
Right.
So we flash forward then to just a few more years, a year or two actually, and we get the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We start bumping into there. And that's right. Is her first premiere, and that was in 2010's...
Iron Man 2, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah, basically Nick Fury, Sam Jackson again, brings her in to try to rope in Tony Stark to be part of the Avenger Initiative. And that's where we see her. And people really liked her take as the Black Widow, as Natasha Romanoff. And they enjoyed it so much that they kept asking her back and had her sign a contractual agreement to make way less than Robert Downey Jr. to repeat her role in multiple films.
Well, I think everybody has to make way less than Robert Downey Jr. or they wouldn't get the film made.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think he was making $50 million a film to start out, plus, you know, back-end residuals or whatever. It was an insane amount of money he was making.
It is insane.
The man's not going to
point out. Sorry, mm-hmm. What's that?
I said the man's never going to have to worry about money, or he shouldn't.
No, he's not worried if his roommate has half the rent.
Yeah, that's true.
But, I mean, and this kudos to this guy for getting cleaned up.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this guy was like, you'd randomly find him naked in a dumpster, you know, in Culver City.
When a little girl's bedroom laying on her bed, he crawled
exactly.
in.
So it's like, and now it's like, he's just king of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
And
it's all really because of I give a lot of credit to Shane Black. Shane Black had him in the film Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and had to pay extra money for insurance to cover him, because it was like 2005, and that was around 2004 2005, and he was still in full on recovery mode and damage control. And much to his credit, he made good to every promise he gave them. And was able to complete the film without an issue.
I'd forgotten about that. Yeah.
Right. And he worked with Val Kilmer, and he didn't like hit the bottle or smoke some crack or something. So that's really good on his part.
Yeah.
To be able to do that. So Shane Black took a chance on him, and then eventually it paid, it went full circle, and it paid it forward to him when Robert Downey Jr., they needed a director/writer for Iron Man 3. And Robert Downey Jr. Recommended then Shane Black for that role. And then Shane Black came in and wrote and directed that film.
There you go.
Yeah. So it was very cool how they looked out for each other that way. You can always appreciate that. And again, kudos to Downey for being able to do that and recover. It's shows the strength of a person's character, their merit of the man, so to speak.
It sure does.
So then, the Iron Man 2 led to the Avengers, which led to millions and millions and millions of dollars, which led to more roles. We saw her in Thor 3. We saw her in Avengers 2. We saw her in Avengers Infinity Gauntlet. We saw her in Avengers Endgame. We've just seen her in so many Avengers films. We saw her
Winter Soldier.
Yeah, we saw her in Winter Soldier. We saw her in the Spike Jonze film, Her.
Oh, that's where right.
She played
yep.
a wonderful voice just of the character, of the basically like the AI character in that, and how she basically woos Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah, which is fascinating to me, because like, why would you have her in your movie and then not show her in every frame you can?
Yeah, that's true. But, I think part of it was because somebody had dropped out before. Samantha Morton, I think, dropped out of the role.
Oh, is that right?
Okay. Yeah, so they needed a real sultry but really calming voice. And you know, when you think of that, you do think of Scarlett Johansson. She has that smoky, calming, like sultry, voice. So it really was a perfect fit. So I'm glad they did it.
Worked out for everybody, except for the first actress.
Yeah, that's true. And that happens a lot in Hollywood. You know, it is what it is.
Yep.
Someday I'll be replacing Al Pacino for some of these roles he keeps getting, damn it.
Never say never.
Right. Yeah. I'm 40 years his junior, but that's whatever. I can still do it. It's fine.
Well, if they do the Irishman. Sorry, we're getting way off track, and this has nothing to do with Scarlett Johansson. I'm not going to talk about the Irishman.
I've never even seen the Irishman. I just I don't know if I want to. It's way too long.
It's a long ass movie.
Yeah, I started to watch Scarface the other night.
That's and a I was long
like,
movie too.
In hour two, and I was like, "Is this not over yet?" And then I paused it, and I saw I like had another hour to go, and I was like, "You got to be shitting me!"
Yeah,
like what is this story telling that it hasn't already told? So like, and I know I'm going to catch hell for that because there's a lot of fans of Scarface out there, but I shut it off after a bit. I was like, "I'm going to have to come back to this."
You know, it's a fun movie, and I grew up in Miami, so I know what a Cuban accent is supposed to sound like.
And yeah.
There's a comical element to Scarface for me.
I mean, him saying, like, cockroach, you yeah. cockroach. I was like, are you shitting me? Like, okay,
but,
sure.
But yeah. It was a fun movie for what it was, and I think it was, I mean, obviously, it was, you know, it hit the zeitgeist at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's a long-ass movie.
Yeah. I think if we're going to talk about, you know, we're talking about films like that, that are like very powerful and very long. I think Captain America and the Winter Soldier was a very long but very powerful film in a lot of ways. I think it's probably Marvel's best film that they've done. And I think that because of the conspiracy that lied within and that it was more of a spy thriller than it was a superhero film. And yeah, I really liked that.
Yeah, that was a fun element, definitely.
Yeah, just the aspect that S.H.I.E.L.D. was corrupt from the inside out, and you know, the who could you trust? And he went on the run, Captain America, a.k.a. Chris Evans, again, with none other than Scarlett Johansson's character, Black Widow, Natasha Romanoff, because Natasha, of all people, is a master spy and knows all about the kind of trouble you can get in and how to get yourself out of and how to disappear. So she was the perfect character for this, and she really sold me more than any of her other roles, or acting as Natasha. This is the film that sold me on her and her capabilities.
She was good. My only thing is they just talk too fast.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, they got to get through it really quickly. There's a lot of detail in that film.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah, so it's, you get the Micro Machines guy to do the talking.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, by the way, I've kind of been talking a lot about it lately, but not on here. But I think they ought to bring Micro Machines back. And I think it's something that should happen.
Hmm. Yeah, I wonder.
I don't know. You have kids. Do you think they just pop them in their mouth?
I hope not.
Yeah. That's probably the issue. Kids were choking on little cars.
Exactly.
You know, it's like the Kinder toys. You can only buy them in Russian markets currently here in L.A.
Yeah.
Otherwise, your child will swallow the toy whole.
And it's the swallowing is not the problem. It's waiting for it to come back out.
That's true. Yeah. That can wreak havoc on the digestive tract for sure.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Which, again, has nothing to do with Scarlett Johansson.
Well, everybody poops, right? I mean,
I suppose that's true.
I'm sure she does. I'm sure she does not look attractive doing it either. There's probably a bunch of grunts and faces and stuff.
I don't know. She's a vegetarian, so I think it comes out smooth.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, you could be right. Yeah. Plus, it looks like she hydrates. She's got really nice skin, so.
I would think. Yeah, that's just, I mean, who doesn't hydrate these days? Come on, people.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk a little bit about the Black Widow. Black Widow's first appearance as a reoccurring non-costumed Russian spy character was in Iron Man, beginning in Tales of Suspense number 52, all the way back in April of 1964 when that issue came out.
So can I just point out, at 56 years old, she still looks amazing.
Yeah. Yes, she does. Yep. In the Avengers, I think it was 28, 29, somewhere around there. I think in 66 and 29, the Widow becomes a reoccurring ally of the Avengers team. Before she eventually becomes the sixth member many years later. She got an update on her costume in the 70s in an amazing Spider-Man comic book, reintroduced her with red hair instead of her former short black hair.
That's right.
Skin-tight black costume, which we all know and love, and absolutely, wristbands, which fired spider threads, which we don't see spider threads anymore. But also really cool because she uses
that was really cool
tranks
yeah.
and shit I think now
so I wonder, did they get a cease and desist from Sony for the
No. No, they had to make an agreement, actually, which is why, like, in, for example, even with Fox, like when they introduced the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, they had already introduced Quicksilver in the Fox X-Men universe. So part of the deal was that they couldn't say that they were Magneto's children, and they couldn't say that they were mutants. So that's why we had such a weird introduction to some of these characters in the Marvel universe and Marvel Cinematic Universe, is because they just couldn't do certain things because other companies, like other studios, had the rights, which they right. had leased out for however long amount of time.
That's so wild.
Yeah. I think the smartest company out of all of them to do anything with it would be Sony, actually, because they know that Marvel wants Spider-Man so bad. They're like frothing at the mouth. And they're like, no, but we'll make a deal with you. You know, we get like 80% of the profit or whatever. I think it was actually way less, but still, they just sit back and don't have to do much. And,
right.
you know, Marvel takes the brunt of the load there and does most of the work. And then they yeah. reap the benefits, which is
yeah.
great.
They make it back, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
Marvel's doing all right.
Yeah. I think that's a company that's going to survive. They're going to be just fine.
Yeah.
So Black Widow's known for her libido. She's slept with a lot of superheroes over the years in comic books.
Nothing wrong with that.
Hawkeye, Daredevil, I'm sure Tony Stark at some point, everybody slept with him.
Yes.
Probably Spider-Man. I mean, there's just like, it's really hard not to come across a character that Black Widow hasn't tried to, I don't want to say penetrate, that's such a poor choice of words, but to sway with her sexy wiles, like her winks and shoulder shrug. I don't know. I got nothing. Like, it's just attractive. Why wouldn't you want to sleep with her? I guess.
Yes. Yeah.
So now we get this film that's been made. Now, unfortunately, because of the pandemic, it kind of took a shit on the premiere, which I think was supposed to be back in last November or something. I believe is when it was supposed to come out. Mm. And then it did not. And then it was supposed to come out in again, they changed the date. I think it was supposed to come out in the summer, and then they changed it to November, and then they had to change the date again, and then it pushed it back again. So this time it's coming out for sure. Not in May this time. It's coming out in July, and it's coming to Disney Plus, I believe, and into theaters.
Yes, same time.
I'm excited because it might be actually able to see it in theaters come July, which would be great.
Yeah, it'll
be great. And super excited about that. So hopefully that works out, and we're all able to go to the movies and watch that, or at least enjoy it on Disney Plus. this one's got it's got Rachel Weisz in there, which I believe plays her sister in the role for the film. It's going to have one of the main villains be the Taskmaster. Now, I don't know if you know much about the Taskmaster.
I don't actually.
All right, so a little bit of tidbit about the Taskmaster is he is a character that was created in the 70s, and he appeared on a cover saying, "Anything you can do, I can do better." So basically, his skill in life is he can watch you do something and then repeat it. So uh-huh. if you are sword fighting and you are a professional sword fighter, he can watch you and then not only sword fight you with the same ability, but even slightly better than your ability at that point.
Wow.
So it's a skill that, like, you know, he could potentially, like, he could watch Natasha fight and then see her fighting style and then know it completely and then fight her and defeat her.
But like will that. Not look as good in that black outfit. I'll tell
no,
you that right
no.
now.
He, thankfully, he doesn't take on the costumes of the other people. He has this really cool cape and like this really ridiculous outfit and with this skull mask that he normally wears that he pulls over his
face. That guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's fun.
Which they kind of changed it a bit in the movies. I'm a little disappointed in it, but I'll allow it.
Hmm.
They're also premiering Red Guardian, who is a character from Mother Russia, who is played by I think it's David Harbour, who was played in Stranger Things. He was the sheriff in that series. It still is, I believe.
He was in Hellboy also.
Yes, he was in the revamped Hellboy for Lionsgate, which did not do well, but was interesting, I will say.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't hate it, didn't love it, but I appreciated their their use of practical effects in makeup and things like that that they did with the characters.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very well done. So he plays this Russian character that is kind of almost a dad to her. And the story, we don't know the full story yet. Obviously, the movie hasn't come out. But I'm very excited to see it. I'm sure you're excited to see it. And anybody else that likes Scarlett should be excited to see it.
Yeah, it definitely looks like a fun ride.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, I think that we've got a few more Marvel films headed our way with her. Probably prequels, although I'm not sure, because they did in, spoiler alert, in Avengers Infinity War, they did, if I recall, it was either Infinity War or Endgame, I think it was Infinity War, they killed her character off. And so what we're getting now in Black Widow is basically a prequel, kind of what happened earlier, a little bit earlier in her career. So we'll see if they change that and bring her back. Probably some type of contractual agreement she would have to make. I think it's a good idea, particularly because I like her as the character, and also because, you know, I mean, she's got a great career. She's done a lot of films. This is where she's making her money. You know what I mean? This is like...
Yeah, definitely.
She could keep doing these until she's rich and fat, so to speak, and then she can just do whatever projects that she wants after that. You know, kind of what Robert Downey Jr. is doing now.
Yeah, I mean...
Producing a lot of content.
Now. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so... You know,
schedule allowing, obviously.
Right.
But also, I mean, yeah. just because it's a prequel doesn't mean they can't keep in that prequel time frame, in that window, and do more... Tell more of that story that happened during that time period.
Precisely. Yeah. You know? We can always go back to the well, so to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else you want to add about Scarlett?
No. I mean, she's fun to watch, and I can't wait for this movie.
Yeah, me neither. Well, again, we're going to go ahead and wrap this up. So thank you for joining me, Robert. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And, of course.
Yeah, good to do something together again.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. This was great. It's great to reconnect. I've actually been loving these little short interview segments like this, you know, where we talk about things and stuff, because I have been able to reconnect with a lot of people that I haven't spoken to or seen in quite some time. Not just because of the pandemic, but because life gets in the way, let's be honest.
Yes, indeed it does.
So as far as anything that that you've got coming down the pike that you'd like to discuss or talk about?
No. No, nothing right really now. Talk about.
Yeah. You've signed all these NDAs. I get it. I get it. I totally get it. I won't pry then. But I do want to mention quickly that we do a live podcast every Monday. It's on YouTube Live under the Rumble Spring Productions page. We have a lot of fun with it. We do a lot of fan participation. We do some giveaways and things like that. So we have a really good time. It's like a little clubhouse. So always feel free to join us on there. Anybody listening, we really appreciate it. We also do our audio podcast, like the one you're listening to right now. We have that available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Spreaker, and a host of other podcast platforms. If you can't find us on one, let us know, and we'll get on that platform immediately. But with that being said, thanks again for joining us, Robert. We very much appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And if you're not out and about anytime soon, perhaps we will see you at the beautifully wonderful, magical comic book shop.
This has been The Real Short Box. We'll see you at the comic shop. Thanks for listening.